gather their things. The next case is Burrish versus Reinke. Again, the next case is Burrish versus Reinke.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
My name is Lyle Koenig, and I, along with James Robert Michael Welsh, are here for Tom Burrish. I finally figured out how to get a little more time to present my arguments. I got to talk faster.
It's effective.
Yeah. This case reminds me of the old days when Catholics couldn't eat meat on Fridays. When you went to a friend's house and they served you, you sat down for dinner, they served you this beautiful, sizzling, delectable steak. So what did you do? Well, the first thing you did is you blessed the steak, and it helped if you did it in Latin, in nominis patris et filii et spiritus sancto. And then you solemnly declared, thou art now a fish, and you ate up. And in this case, it seems to me that the Mr. Reinke has converted his status from a general contractor to a framing carpenter without the benefit of the blessing. The difference it makes, as you know, is that if he is a framing carpenter, we must produce expert evidence as to the applicable standard of care for framers, which we didn't do. But where did Mr. Reinke's status as a general contractor go? How did it disappear? Why did it disappear? In their brief, they state because the defendant would be considered a framing carpenter since he framed the building in question. But I don't recall any evidence in the record as to what framing he did. But even if he did do some framing, that wouldn't alter or change his status as the building general contractor. He's still the general contractor. And therefore, we say the standard that is applicable to the defendant is that of a general contractor in control of the premises, and no expert testimony is therefore necessary to establish his liability. The second thing that the defendant says is that we failed to prove, and this was the court's holding below, that we failed to prove what act or omission of the defendant was the proximate cause of the injury. The trusses were up. They were braced somewhat. There was no sheeting put on the roof. And sheeting is normally put on the roof immediately after the trusses are put up. And there was a huge wind. Mr. Elding's deposition, which is part of the BOE, said that his farm had been hit by a tornado in the past, and the wind that was blowing the day that this house fell down was as strong as the winds in the tornadoes that had hit his place. This was a huge wind. And the defendant, in his deposition, part of the BOE, admits that the wind was very strong. He admitted that the bracing may have been inadequate. It was inadequate. It caused the trusses to fall over. As a result of that, a 2x4 hit Mr. Burrish and caused his injury. So, here are the negligent acts. The defendant was negligent in failing to adequately brace the trusses. He failed to put on the sheeting on the roof, and he instructed Mr. Burrish to be there. Mr. Burrish's affidavit says that Mr. Ranky said, you have to be here and working on this particular day. So, because of those three things, he was injured, and we say that, based upon this record, the defendant is negligent.
So you brought this as a premises liability claim, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And did the trial court address the elements of premises liability at all?
Not that I know of. I don't think so.
The focus was on the specialization of it being a framer.
Well, yes. The focus was on whether or not we had to adduce expert testimony to support our position that the defendant was negligent. And for the reasons that I just stated to you, I don't think we did.
And that really is under the element of the duty owed to your client and whether there's been a breach
yes,
of that duty.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the court found there was no evidence of duty because of the standard of care.
Yes, because right. We didn't adduce expert testimony. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And frankly, I must say that I don't see in the record, I saw this in the defendant's brief, I went back and read the record, and I can't tell where, you know, it says that Mr. Ranky did any framing, but even if he did some framing, our position is that does not convert him somehow into a framing carpenter. I mean, he's still the general contractor, and therefore, he's still responsible for the safety of the premises.
So your position is that there were sufficient facts to support going forward with regard to a general premises liability under kind of a reasonable person standard of care.
Yes, Your Honor.
Versus his separate role as a potentially framing contractor, which might have required expert testimony.
Yeah, that's right.
Your claim is not based on a defect necessarily in the construction process. It's on the general premises being unsafe.
Yes, that's right.
Given the conditions.
Yes, given the conditions that I've described. So, for all of those reasons, we believe that you ought to reverse and remand for trial. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
My name is Cliff Kephart, and I'm appearing on behalf of the appellee defendant, Mr. Craig Ranky. Your Honors, Mr. Ranky respectfully requests that this court uphold the district court's order granting Mr. Ranky's motion for summary judgment for three main reasons. First, the district court correctly held that Mr. Burrish failed to produce any evidence as to the applicable standard of care for carpenters or framers installing and bracing trusses on a building. Second, Mr. Burrish failed to submit sufficient evidence to show that Mr. Ranky was negligent in violating the general contractor's non-delegable duty to provide a safe workplace. And third, the district court correctly held that Mr. Burrish failed to produce sufficient evidence establishing that any act or omission of Mr. Ranky was a proximate cause of Mr. Burrish's injuries.
If I might just ask, though, when you talk about lack of sufficient evidence, that's not really what we're looking at in a summary judgment situation, isn't it, whether there's a question of fact?
Yes.
We're not weighing the sufficiency of the evidence.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct, but as the case law suggests that when you're talking about the question of whether a legal duty exists, that is a question of law for the court. And so regarding that first argument that the district court correctly held that Mr. Burrish failed to produce any evidence as to the applicable standard of care, I think it's important to note that is a question of law according to the duty.
What applicable standard of care did the district court use?
The district court talked about framing carpenters, obviously, and there was evidence in the record, especially according to the district judge's summary judgment opinion, where he stated that Mr. Ranky did help install the trusses along with the help of Mr. Tyler Harms, who was also brought in to help with the trusses.
But didn't Mr. Ranky wear two hats then, potentially as the a framing contractor assisting the other individual, but he was also the general contractor.
Yes, you are correct, Your Honor.
And wasn't this brought, as I asked opposing counsel, this was brought as a premises liability claim. Under that type of claim, wouldn't the appropriate standard of care with regard to duty be a reasonably prudent person?
Yes, Your Honor. There's those line of cases, Gayton and then Thomas, if that's exactly what they hold, is that one in possession and control of premises has a duty to exercise reasonable care to keep the premises in a safe condition. This duty relates to the physical condition of the premises and not the manner in which the work is done. I think if you look at that case in Gayton, you have a case that's somewhat on point in that the decedent was somewhere up high, stepped onto a piece of decking or sheeting, and the evidence was that previously that had temporarily been attached, and then somebody had either removed the screws or had cut away the screws. When they cut those away, nobody had warned the decedent. He stepped on that, fell down. Well, the Supreme Court in that case determined that was there's an exception to that particular rule if it's part of the construction process. They deemed that wasn't actually part of the premises, but actually part of the construction process, so it didn't fall under that particular rule, which was cited in the Gayton case. The other case, and I believe it was a Court of Appeals case, was the Thomas case. In that case, you had a different factual setting where a general contractor was building a multiple-level building, commercial building, and it was during the course of the wintertime. In order to try to keep the premises safe, he would, or whoever the general contractor was, or his agents, would lay down sand onto the concrete floor. Well, as things began to get nicer, that concrete floor became slippery because of the sand, and there was lots of testimony from different individuals testifying to that fact, that it did become slippery. In that case, the Court of Appeals did determine that was part of the premises and not part of the construction process. It's our contention here today that this case, where you're talking about trusses, that's a part of the construction process and not part of the premises, just like it was in Gayton, where that decking was involved.
Well, doesn't a general contractor have a duty to, as part of that person's role in maintaining safe premises, if the weather conditions are such and the status of the construction is such overall, to make a decision whether or not employees should be on the premises?
I think, Your Honor, there's a distinction there, because in that rule, that broad rule that is talked about in the case of Gayton and in the case of Thomas, there's multiple different rules, and one of them is if you have control over the work of the subcontractor. I don't think there's any evidence in the record here that says that the general contractor, Mr. Ranke, had control over the work of the subcontractor. The subcontractor was an independent contractor.
But isn't that kind of going to the construction process, whether there's defects in construction? And that's kind of in line with where the district court went in this case, is it was very focused on, well, you have to have an expert to determine whether or not these were defective roof trusses. Very different circumstances when you're just looking at premises liability. Right?
Your Honor, I don't totally agree with that, just because of what the Supreme Court's holding was in Gayton, where they were looking at that decking that had been put into place. I mean, that's similar to trusses that have been put in place. An individual steps on that decking, it slips away, and he falls, and they determined that it didn't fall under them having to take care of the premises. It fell under a construction process. And we believe that this is a similar factually to that instance.
There was evidence, to follow up on that discussion, that Mr. Burrish had expressed concern about the high wind that day, and that Mr. Reinke had directed him to be on the site. So that really kind of undercuts what you're saying, that he's an independent contractor and so there's no liability.
Well, I think, Your Honor, first of all, that particular argument wasn't made by the plaintiff, especially when you look at the pleadings. It's just for the premises. and they talk about them having control and possession of the premises, not control of the contractor. And I think even if the general contractor had asked him to come on that day, if he's an independent contractor, if he's a subcontractor, not an employee for the contractor, that subcontractor can come and go as he pleases and decide if, you know, it's too windy and it looks like it's unsafe, that ultimately he could leave.
So you referenced Gayton a couple times, and that case indicated that a breach of a general contractor's duty to provide a safe workplace to work did not cause the subcontractor's employee's death from the fall off the roof, because that was due to specific actions or inactions involved in the construction process. The employee was not wearing personal protection. So that case is a bit distinguishable from what was brought here in terms of general premises liability.
That part of it is, Your Honor, where they're not wearing the safety protection to prevent them from falling. However, what the court doesn't lay out fully is, well, is that the only thing that they're relying that opinion on, is that they weren't wearing the safety harness, or was it also due to the fact that he stepped on something that was part of the construction process, that the decking was placed on the roof?
Isn't it problematic here, since we're dealing with a summary judgment, that the district court did not analyze premises liability or apply the law related to premises liability to these facts at all?
Your Honor, I think because the only evidence that has been adduced in the record up through the date of the summary judgment opinion was all you had was the testimony from Mr. Ranke. You had testimony from Mr. Harms, and he testified that he believed that the trusses were put up according to industry standards. And then you had the testimony of Mr. Burrish, saying he'd been on multiple job sites, and in his opinion, right after you put up the trusses, you put on sheeting to protect those trusses. Outside of that evidence, there's no evidence to indicate as to...
Well, wasn't there evidence that Mr. Ranke and I believe his brother went out the day before this injury to take a look at things because of the wind conditions, and there was some concern? Isn't that a sufficient factual basis to overcome summary judgment that this general contractor had an awareness of possible danger?
But, Your Honor, I believe that you could potentially rely on that. I also believe that in looking at the Topol case, what that court ultimately decided was that the accident, or what precluded the accident, was something that was open and obvious, where you had a contractor that sat onto a false ceiling joist, and that collapsed, and he ended up fracturing his ankle. I see that I'm out of time, Your Honor. Thank you. Well, in that situation, he sat on that ceiling joist, it collapsed, it fell, he fractured his ankle. The court ultimately determined that that ceiling joist was open and obvious to anyone. I think the same argument could be made here as well, that when the subcontractor, Mr. Burris, shows up to the site, he's been on multiple job construction sites before. He's admitted that in his testimony. He knows that the trusses are up. It's a very windy day. You know, he could have taken further steps to try to protect himself on that day. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. How much time does Mr. Koenig have left?
2 minutes and 59 seconds.
Your Honors, I don't really have any rebuttal unless you have any further questions of me.
Thank you very much. Thank you, counsel. The matter is submitted.
Thank you.